right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. You know, Sandy, yeah, you're an attorney, and the legalese that happens in this country that moves everything, and yet we, the citizens, for the most part, don't understand the legalese that runs our country, right? And business and everything, at the root of it is, you know, in this understanding of what's written, what's protected. You know, we are kind of like sacrificial lambs. We do things as the citizenry, and we think that we're protected in the things that we do. And sometimes, and you know, we take out loans and we take out things and we trust because we don't know. But there's always this penalty that we pay because we don't understand the law the way it's written. And so businesses, in many instances, are able to take advantage of the citizens because the citizens don't understand the legalese of contracts and all those things. Is it safe to say that?
Well, I do think that that people, you know, even sophisticated people get, we can talk about it a little later, but this FTX, this big exchange that carried crypto and had this young fellow who's got a billionaire and suddenly is taking everyone down with him. But you're right. Tom, Dick, and Mary, in the complexities of homeownership and first mortgages and second mortgages and monitoring the debt and understanding who has a mortgage on their house, what might happen to them, all of that stuff can be more complicated than people think, and it can bite them in the bottom at some point by rear its ugly head after years and surprise them with some big problems.
So this is called zombie debt, and it's homeowners who face foreclosure from old mortgages. They may have taken out a second mortgage, Sandy, and thought that was rolled into their original mortgage, mm-hmm. and did not know that they hadn't been paying on the second mortgage because they didn't understand. You would think that, I don't know, Sandy, but you're an attorney, you're a learned person in that. But the average person would think, if I'm taking out a second mortgage, that they would be rolled into the first mortgage, right?
No. I mean, it depends. It depends on who you borrow from. But the fact is that what has been happening is that there have been these second mortgages that were taken out, many of them many years ago, and they've gone into default.
Yes.
People haven't been making payments on them, but there was no effort to collect on them, no pressure on the homeowner to pay until the loan gets so bad,
yes.
that whoever holds the loan sells the loan to a collector, a bill collector. And what happens then, you know, someone will come along and buy someone's bad debts, and they'll say, I'll pay you 25 cents on the dollar for all those bad debts, and I'll go out and try and collect them. And the guy who's holding this bad debt, who made the second mortgage and has been lazy about trying to collect it, says, you know what, I'm going to take the 25 cents. So he sells the debt to somebody else, and that somebody else is Simon Legree. You know, he is going to pursue he's going to pull out all the stops to get that money back. And the first thing he's going to do is going to show up at your door and say, pay up this debt, or I'm going to take your house. And legally speaking, he's got a mortgage on the house. And unless you're in a position to pay up the debt, you are in a position where you might lose the house to this creditor who doesn't have a debt anywhere near the scale of the value of your house. And he's going to be in a position to take the house and sell it and get all of his money back on the loan.
So, Sandy,
and you're going to be houseless.
So, Sandy, that's occurring at a more alarming rate than I think anybody knows. And based on this article that I'm reading, so many people have fallen prey to that. So what I'm asking you is, if I'm the person who financed the second mortgage, Sandy, and why did I not try to get that mortgage paid on a monthly basis? Why did I just ignore it as a creditor? It's almost as if that was done intentionally to eventually wind up happening what happened there. If I'm the person who financed your second mortgage, Sandy, I put an investment there. Why would I not, from the beginning, expect to get my investment back? Why have I been silent on it all these decades?
Well, I'm not sure, but my suspicion is that these loans are loans that are of a relatively small scale that were made on a broad basis, and that the effort to collect them was viewed as not being worth it because that they were probably high interest loans. I mean, it is true that there's a whole grade
cottage
of loans
business,
that are made
right
today. Yes, that are made to relatively high-risk individuals that are made on an installment loans typically, that are made to buy, for instance, furniture or some such thing. And when the loan goes bad, there actually isn't much effort to collect other than to give the person a bad credit rating and to send them a couple of letters saying you're not paying your bills. And at that point, they forget about the debt until they turn it over to a bill collector some period later, who is going to take on the effort to collect those debts, which weren't worth the effort of the original lender, who was making out quite well, because they expected to have, you know, if you make high risk loans, you might expect 15% of your loans to go bad. And you've already built that into your business plan, and you aren't going to spend a lot of money trying to collect it because you're making money on the rest of those loans to compensate you for that risk.
You know, Sandy, here's another thing that I know I've been caught up in. You know, you get these bills from the hospitals. And it says, well, you know, I may have had a surgery 15 years ago. And you get a bill that says you didn't pay this, $800, $900, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't want to ruin your credit. And so you get this bill, and they start making threats it's going to go to a debt collector. It's from 15 years ago. Your insurance company didn't pay it. And so people wind up paying those bills. I know I paid them. And then you find out that this is a scam that's been going on that the government is even aware of. And I even hear commercials saying, you know, these ghost bills that you're getting from hospitals, we're going to try to cut them out. How is it possible that those kind of things can happen?
Well, you know, the consumer lending market has always been a place that has been rife with abuse. Back there was a concept called holder in due course that's now an antique theory, but up until the 1970s, it prevailed. You'd buy a refrigerator from someone who sold refrigerators, and you would take out a loan from the person who sold you the refrigerator. And the refrigerator might be defective, and so you would stop making payments on that loan because that was the way you were buying this thing, which was defective. And if the person who sold you the refrigerator still held your loan, then that was okay because you had a valid claim to offset your obligation to make the payment. But if that person who sold you the refrigerator sold that loan on to somebody else, and you now owed money to Chase Manhattan Bank rather than to Colder's Appliance. Now Chase Manhattan Bank could require you to pay that loan regardless of whether the refrigerator worked or not. And that was a concept called holder in due course. And that was a problem. That was one of the early abuses that was solved in most states through changing the law about defenses and the holder in due course principle. But we had that same thing coming up with all kinds of consumer loans. And look at all the abuses with payday loans. Payday loans are an area of immense abuse. They don't make much effort to collect either, other than to put you into a serious credit problem.
So, Sandy, so regulations that are sometimes created to protect the consumers, lobbyists for those entities that are going to benefit push back against those regulations. And so the lawmakers who are supposed to be looking out for the best interests of the people who elected them, I'm just asking, then make a decision not to protect the citizen, and these laws are able to pass and get through, and the citizen thinks, well, there's got to be some common sense right here, and I'm right based on common sense, but law is not common sense, right?
Yeah, and the lobbyists usually are able to craft very subtle and seductive arguments to the lawmakers about how it is that if you change this law, we won't make these loans at all to these people. And so what you're really doing is depriving the people who need this money from their access to borrowed money, like, for instance, payday loans.
Right.
So, you know, the argument that the lobbyist will give is that these are poor people. They should be entitled to access borrowed money just like rich people. And what you're doing is you're taking away from them a source of money that they might terribly need. And so, you know, that's what happens. Lobbyists are employed to basically craft arguments along with, I suppose, political donations, which make their arguments even more persuasive, surprisingly enough. And they prevail over the real public needs.
You know, Sandy, I want to continue with a lesson, if you will, about law that those of us who, you know, as sacrificial lambs to it, you can give us a little more education on what we should be looking out for, especially now around this time of the year. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. The barrister in a representative government?
Well, you know, they're buying it because they think the property is sold for a dollar amount that's cheaper than what it's worth.
Right.
And so they're going to now try to make money. I suppose it's one of the fundamental premises of slumlords. Of course, that's how slumlording got started. Is you bought houses cheap, and then you filled them with more people than should be living in it,
right,
and charged rent that made the house more valuable. I don't know. It's what goes on in the real estate market. That's what the real estate market is. It's always been filled with speculators. And in fact, Solomon Juneau and some of the earliest founders of Milwaukee were real estate speculators who came out here. So what does the government do about real estate speculators, people who buy homes? I mean, the person who's selling the home thinks they're getting the money they want for it, or they're getting forced out of it because it's been foreclosed, and they're actually buying it from banks, right?
Right,
banks,
yeah, right.
Take the money and whatever. The house goes up for auction and it gets sold.
But doesn't that help destroy communities?
Well, it certainly changes communities. By having third-party ownership, you know, you end up with tenants rather than homeowners.
Yeah.
And everyone understands that a tenant treats maybe a neighborhood and is a different type of participant in a neighborhood than a homeowner might be. So that clearly is a factor. And then the question is whether absentee owners like that will actually care for the premises and cause it to be improved in the same way that
that person or that entity could care less about the neighborhood and the community because they don't live there.
Right, right.
You know.
So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely... It's not a favorable result for a locality, and it's unfavorable. The question is, what is it that a government can or should do about it? What kind of a restriction could you put in place? And it's difficult to fashion one other than one that relates to...
So Sandy, this goes again to what we should be expecting from our government. Maybe we're expecting too much in certain areas, that the government doesn't have the ability to control certain things, and maybe we shouldn't be asking for the government to do that. You know, buyer beware is at the root of all those things, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, the problem is when you get the government trying to take control of the marketplace, you have to figure out what the reason is for it, and it has to be pretty compelling. And if you have, for instance, the government restricting who you can sell your house to,
we should be back on the air. I don't know why we're not back on the air. Connor, shouldn't we be back on the air?
You are.
We're on the air now?
Yeah, we came in.
Oh, we came in. I didn't know we came in.
Well, we inadvertently covered a lot of issues there.
Yeah,
I'm glad they were all newsworthy and subject over the air.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Whew. You know, so anyway, you've been listening to what, you know, what Sandy and I are talking about, and, you know, it is really, we've got to learn the inner workings of things, because the marketplace you're talking about, Sandy, apparently the marketplace has more power than the government in certain entities.
Well, I mean, I think that the underlying organization, the architecture of America's socioeconomic political system is that the marketplace is the fundamental organism through which we all live and exist, and that the government is there only to do those things which the people require that has a high degree of importance, and so they're really. They work next to each other, but they, you know, it's not necessarily a question of one being more powerful than the other. I think the marketplace is what we live in. The government is what we have designed to try and structure the marketplace and to restrict it only in the ways that are necessary based on some serious thoughts and public policies.
So the marketplace... and the government at times needs to regulate the marketplace so the marketplace won't take advantage of the citizens.
Yeah, absolutely. And the earliest, you know, Adam Smith, one of the earliest economists who discussed the marketplace and market economics, recognized right out of the chute that the government needs to regulate markets because markets, unregulated markets can be abusive. They can, people can exercise control in the marketplace that is reflective of power they have, or situations that exist outside of the market that are not affected by the market, like, for instance, the environment, or like social public health. Those kind of interests might not be reflected in the marketplace, and they're supposed to be reflected by government regulations.
So then here's a prime example. You said payday lending. So there's a usury law attached to citizens that we can't take advantage of other citizens and charge outlandish rates on loans that we can make maybe one citizen to another, but yet payday lending is not locked into usury like the citizens are. That doesn't make any sense to me.
The whole principle of interest rates on installment loans.
Sandy, hold the thought. Al, we'll come to you after this break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. When I do.
I got some candy kisses for your lips. Yes, I got some honeysuckle chocolate dip and kisses full of love for you.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That's Fridays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. Sandy, are we on?
We're on. Are we on now?
Yeah, okay. Connor, are we on?
No, actually.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Al. Hey, Al, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for waiting. You say what?
Good morning.
Good morning.
What you all are talking about is very true, except I'm calling on behalf of Tom from L.A. The people are the government, and the problem we have is too much emphasis is put on national government and statewide government, but not enough on the local government, because a lot of the things you're talking about can be regulated, and there could be more emphasis on the local impact if people would start focusing on the aldermanic seats, the county board seats, and things that impact them on a local level, then move that to the next level. Does that make sense? Hello,
Sandy.
Well, yeah, I mean, some things can the local. I mean, like, you know, the old hadith is all politics is local, and everything does get down ultimately to local issues. But the ability of the local government to regulate, for instance, payday lenders is pretty limited. They could possibly regulate
they can prevent them from coming in.
Don't they have to be licensed?
Well, they don't get licensed by counties or cities, however.
How can they move into a city and not have a license to perform that business? A grocery store would, my business or what have you. We have to have some type of agreement from the government to be able to operate within their space. And payday lenders, when they first started here, I was with the SDC board, and we had hearings on them that we passed information about their negativity and their high rates of interest to the city and county government, which limited the number of those stores that opened in the Milwaukee area. Senator Gary George was one of the owners of several of them.
Right. There's restrictions that can be imposed through zoning. I suppose it could be a bit like going to law school here. There's just the nature of the restrictions that can be imposed by a county or a city are different than the restrictions that can be imposed by the state. And so you have to find the right level of government to create the kind of restrictions you're looking for. But yes. For instance, a city could restrict the number of businesses of a certain type that are located in the city, depending upon the powers they've been given with respect to zoning.
Okay, all I'm saying is that we've been putting too much emphasis on national government and on statewide government without emphasizing and taking control of our local government, which can regulate all of it, in my opinion. I may be wrong, but that's the way I see it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the call.
I think you might be right and wrong. Yeah. I think that I do think that local government and that the populace needs to spend far more effort and time focusing on local issues and getting the local government to do all that it can do and to analyze what is needed locally. For instance, if we really focused on local issues, one of the things we'd probably focus on would be child daycare. And we might begin to at least create the political movement that's necessary to get universal child daycare available as it should be all around. And that movement might well start through school districts. It could start in a variety of ways.
Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Hey, good morning, Bill. How are you? Thank you very much for the call. Thank you for waiting. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Cindy. You guys, I tell you what, you ought to charge for what you do.
Well,
you're not alienators. And let me get to a point. The previous caller, what he said had so much.
Hey, Bill, you must be on a.
And here's how I would look at it. If you are talking about payday lenders or payday loan, whatever you want to call them, they can be a detriment to the community. Now, if you're a community-minded community, you're going to say, we believe this kind of business is not advantageous for our community because the community not building.
Bill, you must be on the speakerphone.
To give you a quick conclusion.
Bill, are you on the speakerphone?
Yes, sir.
Can you get off the speakerphone?
Yeah, I
okay.
can take off.
Okay, go
sure,
ahead.
Sure,
go
okay,
ahead.
Give me a second. Well, I don't know if I can. I'm driving. Can you put up with it just one more bit?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm driving.
Okay, go ahead.
On what you talk about, Earl, is, you know, the care and concern for the people that don't have the help that you... Here's what I'm thinking. As we move forward, our midterm elections made a statement for democracy. Let's move forward and help these people. And if we can't do it through government, do it through our churches. These people can be helped. They're the ones that we really care about that don't have all the niceties that we have. And I believe moving...
Hey, Bill, we got to let you go because your phone is breaking up. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay.
Let's go to Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, thanks for waiting.
First, I want to ask Sandy a question. Sandy, why do you call it the abortion issue?
Well, I know your point here, and I was talking about it historically because that historically is what it was called, and I know we need to
call it either the woman's right to choose or the government's right to choose because it's really government taking over a woman's right to choose, and I think we all know most women do not choose determination.
And that was actually the point I was making, that it's a government intervention that the abortion issue, as it was discussed, was as it was driven by the religious right, was really asking the government to intervene and to control women's choice.
I understand. I just want that to be out there because we really lose a lot of voters when we make this just an abortion issue. It's not. It's about women being controlled by government or making the choice themselves. I just wanted to get that out there. Also, you know, Sandy, you were talking about how we have to kind of find common ground with some of the Republicans and things like that. And what I find really appalling, and I find that I can't really find common ground when, you know, they can't say the name of our party correctly by calling it the Democratic Party. Instead, they say the Democrat Party, right? So Ron Johnson constantly says the Democrat. That's not a way to be able to communicate with a person, is when you can't even respect them enough to, you know, call them by the name of the actual party. You see that? You know what I mean?
So Tom, it's semantics. And
well, it is semantics, but that's what the Republicans win on, are semantics and messaging. So it's very important that we have to be really careful about that. You know what I mean? I'm just saying that I would love to be able to, you know, because Sandy always says kind of meet them where they're at and all that kind of stuff with the Republicans. And I'm just saying I would love to. But, you know, when they can't even have the respect you know, that'd be like me calling someone else by a different name. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just throwing that out there. And the other couple things is just for your own benefit, Sandy, transgender is the word, not transsexual, just so you know. In the gay community, it's LGBTQ plus, but it's transgender. You had said transsexual before, and I know that that might, you know, get people's ears up. And then also the word tolerate, because myself as a gay man, I'm not here just to be tolerated. I'm here to be able to share my ideas and be able to have a dialogue, but not be tolerated. I'm not trying to be a jerk here. I'm just
I appreciate, because I do think that semantics is important, particularly as we are talking in areas of that reflect respect. I was using the word tolerance only because that's the term that is used in religious discussions about how it is that we are taught to be tolerant of other people's views and other people's thoughts. But you're right. People are entitled to more than being tolerated. They're entitled to being accepted. And acceptance is really the principle.
I think there's no question.
Thank you for that.
Tom, thank you very much for the call.
And Earl, I'm following you on Twitter now.
Okay, man.
Get on Twitter.
I forgot.
I'm one of your new followers. I told all my followers to follow you.
I had forgotten.
Incidentally, Tom, I thought that your 4-minute dialogue about social media was the best condensation and instructional piece I had heard about it, because I now feel like I understand it much better than I did before you described it. Because obviously,
Sandy, coming from you, I find that as high praise. So thank you very much.
So Tom, I haven't even learned to master Facebook yet. So.
Don't mess with Facebook. Just go to Twitter. It's not as many characters, Earl, and it's a lot easier.
Hey, I think Facebook is yesterday. My understanding is, as stupid as I am about this, I get the feeling that Facebook is yesterday's medium, and Twitter and TikTok are tomorrow's.
Oh, okay.
As long as Elon Musk doesn't destroy it in the next couple of days, it definitely will be continue to thrive. So let's just hope he doesn't destroy it.
Thank you very much for the call, Tom. As always, you know, Sandy, if there's so many different things as we've been talking about this last hour about the government's role, and I'm really. You know, this is the first time, Sandy, that I've heard about the marketplace. And, I mean, to the degree that the marketplace has this prominent role in our lives. I mean, you know, I've never heard that before.
Well, the marketplace is the sea that we live in. You know, it's we're in a terrarium, and the marketplace is where we live, and the government is what we create to try and structure the marketplace so that it works better. But it's the marketplace that we're fine tuning. It's not the government that we're trying to tune up with the marketplace. It's just the opposite.
So, but that tells me, and maybe I'm interpreting it the wrong way, Sandy. Is that marketplace meaning business? Is it safe to say that?
Marketplace is all of the individuals. Is all of us individually. And as we operate in businesses, it's all of us with acting in our own individual capacities. That's the marketplace. And it's the fundamental premise upon which freedom and freedom of action was created. It was really the Renaissance was the result of, in many respects, the creation of markets, the marketplace for goods and services that allowed people to begin to act very independently from government and to become independent entities. And so it's really like been a fundamental ideological and sociological change and shift that is quite fundamental.
So the marketplace, and excuse me for being so ill, prepared or understanding what we're talking about here, but when you talk about the marketplace, seems to me you said all of us as individuals are in that marketplace, But then some of us have branched out from being individuals in the marketplace to business owners in the marketplace. And right. The business owner is in a position that gives him or her more control over the individuals who are in that marketplace. Is it safe to say that?
Well, yeah, different entities in that marketplace might have different levels of economic power.
Sandy, hold the thought, because, this is great information. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. To the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday, and that means Fridays with Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, I'm asking you all these questions because I didn't know any of those things. I didn't know that that was the way our government basically... it's set up, you know. I'm sure I'm not alone in that assessment. And so, what you are saying is valuable to us, who now see government in a different role. I never thought for once that, you know, that business climate or the marketplace. Is the real driver of our government, of our country. Can't hear you.
Places where,
go ahead.
The marketplace is where everything gets generated, right? That's where business is conducted. That's where the money is developed to pay taxes back to the government to support the government. The government is basically there to make sure that the marketplace works. So, for instance, if there was only one employer in the marketplace, you'd have to regulate that employer because you and I couldn't quit our job because we have no place else to work. We'd get exploited terribly. But if there are many, many, many employers in the marketplace, and we're free to go and work someplace else tomorrow if we aren't being treated well in our job today, then presumably the marketplace is going to cause our employer to treat us well enough so he can keep his workers. So you don't need as many restrictions on the workplace in that circumstance as you do with large employers who have market, so-called market power. And so government is basically there to try and restrict the extent to which anybody in a marketplace, anything in a marketplace, might have power that would restrict the choice of the individuals operating in the marketplace.
Which is, if, for instance,
you want to buy a car, if there's only one manufacturer making cars, there'll be no competition on the price for that car, and you'll have to pay a very high price. If there are 15 automobile manufacturers and you can go and pick between them, they're going to have to compete with one another for your business, and there's less need for the government to regulate those people because competition is going to keep them tuned up to providing you what you want as a buyer in the marketplace. So, I mean, those are gross examples, but if a marketplace involves everybody having many choices about everything they do, there's less need for government control than in the circumstance in which choices are narrowed by the circumstances.
Well,
in the market.
Which is why they always use the verbiage the free market, and that the market should be less regulated than it is, right? Yeah, I mean,
In a free market, I think another word would be a perfect market, where there's so many competitors providing the services and so many competitors pursuing you as a worker, that the competition keeps everything tuned up to the point where it's delivering what you want. But the fact is that very few markets are perfect, and very few markets therefore don't require some form of regulation. Furthermore, markets aren't going to take care of things like environmental effects. You know, if you buy a car, it's going to spew out greenhouse gas, and you as the buyer might not care about greenhouse gas, but then your neighbors all over might care about it. So they want to restrict your capacity to buy something that's going to put out greenhouse gas.
So, Sandy, that model of the marketplace is the same model all over the world? I mean, there's a marketplace,
The marketplace is one system of organization, one for the political economic environment in which you live. Another one would be complete socialism, and in that circumstance, right, the government would own everything, right?
Yeah.
So those are and then there's all communism, sorts of degrees, and, yeah, all sorts of degrees in between.
So, I mean, wow, it really does kind of open my eyes then to why things are set up in the manner that they're set up then. Like a prime example is in Milwaukee, I've seen gas as low as $3.10 a gallon now in the central city. And mm-hmm. Well, but I also see it at $3.80 in the same area. How can it be that one place it's $3.10 and another place is $3.80? Isn't that regulated?
No, it's not regulated, and that's because there's competition. You can drive your car to the other gas station if you want to take the trouble.
If you know that if you know that the prices have dropped down.
Right. And of course, you can buy telephone apps that will keep you clued into that kind of stuff, too. I mean, yeah, the markets don't work perfectly, but where there is competition, there can be differentials like that. And presumably, the marketplace is not performing as well as it should, because everyone ought to be driving their car to the cheaper gas station if it doesn't take more gasoline or time to get there.
So let me, because I also know that if there's two service stations across the street from one another, they make sure that their prices are the exact amount. That's the marketplace, right?
That's the marketplace. And what they don't want to allow, if you're going to regulate the marketplace, those people can't sit down at lunch and decide what their price is going to be. They have to reach those price decisions independent from one another, and then it's okay.
All right. So, I mean, that was, you know, we got to do that a little bit more, Sandy.
That was Economics 1.
Well, that's where I needed to start. But thank you as always, my friend. Really, really good talking to you as always. Have a great weekend. Everybody have a great weekend. It's going to be in the 20s. If we just hang on a little while longer. Just hang on. You know, Sandy, I got good news. The windows are going to be up next Wednesday.
Ah. Right. I'll be there Monday. I'll come dressed warmly.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Connor. Thank everybody who made the show go. Dress safe and warm. Be safe. I'll be back on Monday. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.